Okay, cast your mind back to August 20th, 2025. There's this huge buzz, right? You probably saw the headlines everywhere. GPT-5, OpenAI's newest model at the time, had apparently solved an open problem in convex optimization. I mean, Sebastian Bubeck's post on X, it just went viral, showed GPT-5 tweaking this known math bound, improving it within minutes. And for a lot of people, it felt like, wow, this is it, a historic moment, AI really stepping up.
Absolutely. The public perception was definitely one of awe, a striking demonstration of AI power, as they said.
But as often happens, the view from inside the field, from actual mathematicians, well, it was a bit different, wasn't it? More nuanced.
That's right. Ernest Ryu, who's an expert in convex optimization, which is basically about finding the best possible solutions in complex situations, think logistics or machine learning.
Right.
He pointed out pretty quickly that the AI's result, well, it relied heavily on a well-known ingredient, something called Nesterov's theorem.
Ah, okay, so
Oh.
not plucked from thin air.
Exactly. Ryu suggested that an experienced researcher, someone familiar with the field, could likely have reached a similar conclusion in, say, a few hours.
So that immediate contrast is fascinating. Public sees a breakthrough. Experts see, well, maybe really fast, efficient application of existing knowledge.
Precisely. And that tension, that gap between the hype and the expert view, is exactly what we're diving into today.
We're looking at this paper, GPT-5's Mathematical Research, a Malievenstein experiment. It came directly out of that GPT-5 episode. The researchers wanted to do a control test, to really see rigorously if GPT-5 could genuinely go beyond known results. So we'll explore what it did, how it did it, importantly, where it tripped up, and what this might mean for AI in cutting-edge research. Let's unpack it. That initial wave of excitement around GPT-5 and convex optimization was just huge. The feeling was, wow, AI isn't just assisting anymore. It's competing with top mathematicians now.
And what's so illuminating there is exactly that gap you mentioned, the general perception versus the specialist understanding. The fact that someone like Ryu could almost instantly contextualize it, link it back to established work, that really highlights where the actual novelty, or maybe lack thereof, was.
It wasn't necessarily creating brand new math from scratch.
It seemed more like incredibly sophisticated recombination, putting known pieces together very, very quickly. But was it innovating? That was the big question.
And that question, that sort of novelty gap, that's what motivated the researchers behind our paper today, right? Charles Philippe Diaz, Luis de Maya, and Ivan Noordim.
Exactly. They decided, okay, let's design a proper experiment, a controlled setting.
Their goal was specific. Could GPT-5 take a mathematical result that was qualitative, basically saying, yes, this thing converges, and turn it into a quantitative one?
Meaning, could it not just say yes, but also how fast? Could it provide explicit convergence rates?
And they picked an area they knew really well.
Their home turf. The Malievenstein method. It's in probability theory.
Okay, maybe break that down a bit. Malievenstein.
Sure. Think of it like this. You have a bunch of random factors influencing something, maybe like random noise affecting a signal. You want to know if overall the result starts to look like a standard bell curve, the normal distribution.
Okay, makes sense.
The Malievenstein method is a toolbox for that. It uses two main ideas. First, the Stein method. That helps you test if something is heading towards that normal distribution. And crucially, it helps measure the speed, the rate of convergence.
Got it. Speed is key.
Then there's Malievan calculus. That's a more sophisticated framework for dealing with how random variables change and interact, especially in specific settings like Gaussian or Poisson spaces, basically different flavors of randomness.
So you put them together.
And you get this powerful combination. You can show that convergence happens, and you can get those explicit rates. You get the yes and the how fast.
And this is where it gets really interesting for the experiment. They didn't just ask GPT-5 to resolve something already known.
No, absolutely not. They took a recent theorem from Bessent-Conner, Kramer, Bang, and Svensson, which was qualitative. It proved convergence happened, but it didn't say how fast.
So the challenge for GPT-5 was.
Go further. Turn this qualitative result into a quantitative one. Find that explicit convergence rate. And this was genuinely an open problem. It hadn't been tackled in the literature before.
Wow, so they were really asking it to push the boundary into territory the humans knew well but hadn't charted quantitatively yet.
Precisely. A real test of innovation, not just retrieval.
Okay, so first test, the Gaussian setting. They prompted GPT-5 with a specific task involving something called the fourth moment theorem for the sum of two Wiener-Itô integrals. Now, those terms sound complex, but maybe think of Wiener-Itô integrals as just the math language for describing, like, random, messy processes, stock prices, particle movements.
That's a good way to think about it, yeah. And the fourth moment theorem is basically a check. Does the combination of these random things start smoothing out into that bell curve shape? They added a complication, too, asking about integrals with different parities, which is a specific mathematical condition.
And initially, how did GPT-5 do?
Strikingly well, actually. The paper says the first interaction was strikingly effective.
Really?
Yeah, it laid out a generally correct statement, seemed to grasp the concepts, use the right tools, impressive first pass.
But I sense a but coming.
There was a but, a significant one. It made a reasoning error. It calculated a specific term, this co-Y2Z2, incorrectly.
Like getting the sums wrong in a big calculation.
Exactly. And it was an error that could have completely undermined the entire proof.
So the human researchers had to step in, like supervisors.
Mm-hmm. First, they gave it a gentle nudge. Check your formula.
Did that work?
Not quite. Yep. GPT-5 checked, but came back with the same incorrect formula, and the explanation it gave was also wrong.
Okay, so not self-correcting yet.
Not on this point. So the researchers had to be more explicit. They pointed out the error more precisely, basically highlighting the exact part that was wrong.
And
then it clicked. GPT-5 admitted the statement was wrong. And crucially, the authors note, it understood where the mistake came from.
That's important, not just admitting error, but understanding why.
Yes. And after that correction, it produced the right reasoning and the correct formula. It shows that iterative process, right? Guided correction leading to the right answer. Very much like working with a junior researcher.
And through that back and forth, they actually arrived at a new result.
They did. With that human guidance, GPT-5 helped formulate the quantitative 2-chaos fourth moment theorem for this Gaussian case. Theorem 2.1 in the paper.
And what does that theorem basically say?
It establishes a bound on the total variation distance. Think of that as a measure of how different the distribution is from a perfect Gaussian bell curve. Mm. That distance is controlled by something called the fourth cumulant of the sum.
Okay. And there was a key simplification in this Gaussian case.
Yes. A crucial point was that certain mixed odd terms, things like the average value of x cubed times y, they just cancel out, they vanish, because of the specific properties of the Gaussian setting and the different parities they chose. That vanishing made the final result cleaner.
Interesting. And beyond just doing the math, GPT-5 also helped write it up.
It did, yeah. Once the math was corrected, it could reformat the result in the style of a research article. Introduction, the theorem itself, a very detailed proof. Even a bibliography.
Wow.
And it generated a concluding remarks, section 2, suggesting future research directions, like exploring non-Gaussian frameworks.
So it's like a very capable, if sometimes error-prone, research assistant who can also handle the formatting and suggest next steps.
Exactly. Which really makes you think, what does it mean to solve a problem in this context? Is it getting it right first time, or is this collaborative guided process? Here, it was definitely the latter.
And that suggestion from GPT-5 itself about non-Gaussian frameworks, that actually led the researchers to the next part of their experiment.
It did. They thought, okay, let's follow that lead. Let's try the Poisson setting, a different kind of randomness.
So new chat session, fresh prompt. To avoid confusing the AI with too much prior context.
Right. They started a new session to avoid context window issues. They asked GPT-5 to adapt the theorem for Poisson processes.
And did it pick up on the differences?
It did, initially. It quickly noted a structural difference in the Poisson world, those mixed odd moments like EX3Y. They don't necessarily vanish like they did in the Gaussian case, so you couldn't just copy-paste the theorem.
Good observation, but again, a stumble.
Again, yes.
Yeah.
It completely missed a key insight. There's a property, COVX2Y20, which still holds in the Poisson case. And importantly, this was easily deducible from the information the researchers had already provided to it.
So it had the pieces, but didn't put them together.
It seems so. It failed to make that connection spontaneously.
How did the researchers handle it this time?
First, they tried an open-ended question. GPT-5's response was a confident but wrong short answer. No.
Uh-huh. Okay. Like, nope, definitely not true.
Pretty much. So again, they had to be more direct. They pointed it to a specific equation in the material they'd given it. What about 2.4?
And that did the trick?
Immediately. As soon as its attention was directed there, GPT-5 understood how 2.4 indeed implied that COVX2Y20, the light bulb went on, but only when someone pointed it at the switch.
Got it. So with that final piece of human-provided insight,
it could then correctly reformulate the theorem for the Poisson setting. Theorem 3.1 in the paper, the fourth moment theorem under vanishing odd moments.
And what's the condition there?
It basically says you get convergence to the normal distribution if those tricky mixed odd terms, EXN3YN and EXNYN3, tend towards zero in the limit.
Okay. And they pushed it one step further, asking for a counterexample.
Yes, and this is really important. At their request, GPT-5 generated a counterexample, proposition 3.2.
Why is a counterexample so useful?
It shows the limits of the theorem. It demonstrated a scenario where the condition about vanishing odd moments isn't met. In that case, you could have a random variable that looks Gaussian, in some ways variance 1, fourth moment 3, but it's not Gaussian because its third moment isn't 0.
Ah, so it really defines the boundaries. The theorem works here, but not there.
Precisely. It highlights the necessity of the conditions. And again, GPT-5 produced this crucial piece, but only when prompted. It wasn't just about getting the theorem right, but understanding why and when it's right, and GPT-5 needed help drawing those lines.
So, reflecting on these two experiments, the Gaussian and the Poisson, what was the researcher's final takeaway on GPT-5's role?
They summed it up quite clearly. Its role was essentially that of an executor responding to our successive prompts.
Just following instructions, basically.
More or less. And they added this critical assessment. Without us, it would have made a damaging error in the Gaussian case, and it would not have provided the most interesting result in the Poisson case.
That's quite a statement. It really emphasizes the need for human oversight.
It does. They describe the whole interaction as feeling very similar to working with a junior assistant. You know, exploring ideas, trying things, finding counterexamples, tweaking statements as you go.
A very fast, very knowledgeable assistant, maybe, but still needing that senior guidance.
That seems to be the picture, yes. It could follow reasoning, admit mistakes when they were pointed out, even suggest plausible next steps.
Right.
But it primarily supported incremental research. It was great at combining existing concepts, following a path laid out for it, but it didn't seem capable, at least in this experiment, of generating genuinely new ideas or insights entirely on its own.
And surprisingly, it wasn't even a time saver for them.
No, they found it quite the opposite, actually. Because it required such careful verification and constant guidance, it ended up taking more time, not less. The idea of just hitting a button and getting novel math seems, well, still pretty far off based on this.
So what are the bigger worries here, the broader implications they discussed?
Well, one major concern they raise is the potential for a proliferation of incremental results.
Meaning?
Meaning AI like this could make it very easy to generate lots of papers that are technically correct, maybe extending existing theorems in minor ways, but aren't particularly insightful or groundbreaking.
Like flooding the zone with okay research.
Kind of. It could saturate the scientific landscape, making it much harder for truly original deep work to get noticed. They compare it to the flood of technically competent but uninspired outputs we might see in, say, music or art generated by AI.
That's a sobering thought. And they also mentioned a specific impact on PhD students.
Yes, they see a potential specific negative effect there. The traditional PhD process involves a lot of struggle, right?
Yeah.
Trying things, making mistakes, finding your own way through a problem. That's how you develop into an independent researcher.
Right. The struggle is part of the learning.
Exactly. And the worry is, if students start relying too heavily on AI that can just instantly spit out technically correct but shallow arguments, they might miss out on developing those crucial skills of deep thinking, critical evaluation, and genuine problem solving.
They might not build that research muscle, essentially.
That's the concern. It raises fundamental questions about the future health of science itself.
Huh.
Are we optimizing for speed and quantity, potentially at the expense of depth and real innovation?
So wrapping this up, we started with that huge excitement, GPT-5 solving open problems within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But this deep dive into the Melevenstein experiment, it paints a much more, well, nuanced picture, doesn't it?
It really does. You see an AI that's incredibly capable in many ways, processing information, applying complex methods, even formatting results, a powerful assistant, but one that still fundamentally needs expert human guidance, correction, and perhaps most importantly, the ability to ask the right questions and identify the truly interesting paths forward. The generation of genuinely novel ideas, that still seems firmly rooted in human intuition and critical thought, at least for now.
Though the authors do make a point about the speed of progress, right?
They do. They acknowledge the significant improvement over older GPT versions happened incredibly quickly, which naturally leads to the big open question.
Will this always be the case?
Exactly. Today, it's a powerful but guided assistant. But with progress continuing at this pace, Could AI one day substantially displace the role of mathematicians?
And their answer is,
it's an open question that only the future will tell.
A fascinating thought to mull over indeed. Will the assistant eventually take the lead? We'll have to wait and see. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into AI, math, and the future of research.
Thank you.
We'll catch you next time.